Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 189 of Getting It Out Podcast. That was Mask Up with the Rage Against the Dying of the Light. And I'm sitting here with my daughter, Mazzy, and she just listened to the song. How did you feel about that song?
I don't like it.
Well, why don't you like it?
I don't like rock.
You don't like rock? What about roll?
No.
No? Okay. What should we play next time? Because it's like 0 for 3 now. You haven't liked them all, and that's okay. But what do you think we could play that you would like next time?
I don't know.
You don't know? You're very into this hamster game you're playing right now?
Yeah.
Yeah? Can you explain what it is?
So basically, I have to try to go through a maze without dying. Because if I die, I lose.
Without killing your hamster, right?
Yeah.
Did you name your hamster?
No. There's zero names.
What if you could name it, what would it be?
Hammy.
Hammy? I remember you used to have a hamster named Hammy.
Yeah, MC Hammy.
Yeah, it's a very cool hamster. Okay, well, do you know what is cool about Mask Up and this band that you just heard, even if you don't like the song?
What?
That it's a bunch of guys from a few different bands, and they all got together to raise money for UNICEF, which is a charity that helps kids like you. So that's cool, right? I mean, you don't get any of the charity because you're not in need, but so don't get too excited.
Yes, I am.
What do you need?
Money.
What do you need money for?
Games.
Hamster games.
a new bunny, a new hamster.
You just want a couple more rodents?
Want more animals.
Okay. Fair enough. You want to save the animals, right?
I want a cute cat.
You have 4 cats.
No, I only have... Oh, yeah, yes, I do.
All right. Well, thank you for your help on this one, Maz. Okay, we'll go over that again. That was Mask Up with The Rage Against the Dying of the Light. And that's from their upcoming EP, which is going to be released on Upstate Records and will be available everywhere. That song is available wherever you stream music. And as I mentioned, all proceeds from the record are going to go to UNICEF. It features past and present members of bands like First Blood, Full Blown Chaos, Lionheart, and who else? Sworn Enemy, to name a few. A couple of guest spots on there. You just heard Chris from Shattered Realm and Self of the Living. So anyway, if you like heavy hardcore, it's something to look out for. And while this episode isn't entirely about heavy hardcore, it is about heavy music, and some of it is hardcore. And the main event here, the interview, is going to be with Jim Hodge of Mastiff. They got a new record coming out called Leave Me the Ashes of the Earth, and we're going to talk all about that. So, let's get going.
Yeah, what's good, all you bitches and bitches? It's the illustrious Hot Dome, back at it again with another podcast intro. He said, oh, you want to do a podcast intro for the Getting It Out podcast? I said, oh, shit, I got to write a rap verse, don't I? He said, no, you don't got to write a rap verse. It's a hardcore podcast. I said, all right, I think I can maybe make that happen. Let's see what we can do. Kick it. Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies. Peace to my family, make friends till they bury me. All the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We be getting it in, where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We'll be getting it in, where you getting it out? Get in and out! Alright motherfuckers, you're in the right place at the right time. Rest in peace, Jay Money, and LFTW forever!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. So here we are. It's another episode, and it's another episode that I almost forgot to fucking do because it's a holiday weekend. I'm not complaining about that, of course. It's just that I have off work tomorrow. It's a 3-day weekend, so I forgot that I do the episodes on Monday. So I got to get this thing done, right? With Sunday evening, I'm going to sit down, watch some Lego programming with my family, as we like to do. We did some, did some Sunday morning Legos. You know, it just feels like that's what it's about lately. I don't know where it came from, but it's here, all right? And I'm all right with it. I played some card games. It's raining. It's been raining for 17 days straight here in Pennsylvania. And that's a big-time exaggeration, but it might just be one. But it feels like it's been 17. It's been flooding everywhere. Everywhere. Except for my basement, which is fine. It's flooding. There's neighbors who've had hoses running out of their basements for like a week. I'm exaggerating about that too, but it seems like it's been that long. Philadelphia, the Vine Street Expressway, the main corridor that you drive through there, 676, is underwater and people are swimming in it. And what it really is sewage and poo-poo. And that's disgusting. I got to do that drive on Tuesday. I hope it's cleaned up by then. I can't be driving my 2010 Hyundai Elantra through that. It might get dirty. Just another reminder that summer is over and I'm still complaining. Though I still got things to do on the weekend. Still got a busy schedule to keep, and that's all right. That's good. I like that. Including this weekend. Very busy weekend, which is great. I hope you had a busy weekend too. Because what do they say about idle hands? They're something like the devil's business or whatever. You know me. I'm good for sayings and reminding you of them. And reminding you of what they aren't, I should say. But yeah. I've already talked for too long about nothing. So let's get to a conversation about something. I talked to Jim Hodge from the UK's Mastiff about their new record, Leave Me the Ashes of the Earth. It's coming out on E1 Music. It's pretty awesome. It's hardcore. It's sludge. It's metal. It's all sorts of things. It's grimy. It's blackened. It's the stuff that I like, all right? Amongst others. But I like this stuff too. So I want to play you a song from that record. It's called Midnight Creeper. They just put out a new video for it. You should check that out immediately. This whole record comes out this coming Friday. So consider this your warning. All right? So check out this song, Midnight Creeper, and then listen to my interview with Jim. Ah! a little bit about you. Who are you? Okay. Where did you come from? How did you discover heavy music? When did you discover heavy music?
Discovered heavy music when I was probably, I was 8. Back in Black came out.
Yes.
So that was it. Back in Black came out. It was played on, TV, I suppose. Begged and pleaded with my mum to let me have this single. I had been into music previous to that stuff, like, Adam Ant.
Yeah.
I was into that sort of stuff at school, but then this... No, get out. Go on, bugger off. Sorry.
No, that's fine. It's totally fine.
I've got an 8-year-old who's...
I got an 8-year-old, so I get
interested in this.
Yeah.
AC/DC dropped that, and that was pretty much the journey started then. I think I bought that and the Flight of Icarus the same day.
Oh, nice. Nice. So you're talking, what year is that?
1980, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
So I'm giving my age away now.
Well, no, you got it in early. So from there on, I mean, that's pretty, I mean, it's awesome. I'm not kidding. Currently reading an AC/DC book myself because...
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's Mark Evans. He wasn't on Back in Black, so... Nice.
Yeah, I'm actually in one of their videos.
You are? Which one?
I was in... oh, God. Why did I even say that? Because I can't remember it. Off the last album they only thought.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's all right.
It'll come to me. It'll come to
me. Yeah. Is it just a live video or something?
Yeah, it's the one in the round. Most of DC's videos are in them.
They got a hell of a formula.
Rock or bust. There you go.
Everything's the same with them, but they still do it well.
They do. That last song was amazing.
The one from last year, what was that? What was that called?
Yeah, Power Up.
Power Up, yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, they keep doing it. So was AC/DC is AC/DC how you did they direct you towards? Did you get heavier from there? I guess.
I probably stopped sort of around there, and then Ozzy would gone solo by the time I started really listening to music. So I was never a big Sabbath fan. So it was that sort of, Ozzy through the glam years and Motley Crue, and then Metallica came along like most kids. And then, but at some point, previous to all that, I was into Heart, or I'd bought Heart, Bad Animals album. And a kid at school said, I'll swap it. Do you want to swap it? So I was like, yeah, I'm not into it massively. I'll swap it. What you got? And he was like, I've got this album. And I don't like it. It's this album called Raining Blood. And I was like, oh, go on then. I'll have a go at that. And had a go at that. And that was pretty much the moment, musical directions were influenced ultimately. And, and then Slayer came, so Slayer was the proper turning point.
That's funny because it's Rain and Blood. I mean, you either love it or it terrifies you and you never want to listen. You never want to hear it again, right?
Mum was like, what on earth are you listening to? But yeah, that was pretty much it. And then looking at the artwork and, peeling over that. And then I probably went back a bit to Iron Maiden again and looked through, that sort of stuff. That was pretty much it. The Slayer and then going down the thrash route.
Do you remember the first concert you ever attended?
First metal concert. First metal concert was Dio on the Dream Tour, which is 1992, I believe. And I think, that was it. And then Warlock was supporting. So
nice. That's a good one too.
It was Megadeth. It was the second one.
You've got a good track record then. You came in.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's quite good. Yeah. Quite good at a little, yeah. There's a lot of kids that I know now, and they're like, well, you're an old dude. You're not supposed to be doing metal. And then you go back and do the history, and they're like, you saw so-and-so, and you saw, well, yeah, you got to, you know, you aren't going to see those bands if you are older.
Yeah, you know what? I'm only 36, right? So I've had a bit of a crisis right now with catching bands before they die. That's been my thing. Like, I fucked up. I didn't see. There's so many bands I didn't go see because I thought they'll just be around next time. You know, I won't go see. I don't need to go see Motorhead right now. I don't need to go see Dio. And then they died. And so, yeah. Like, next week, I'm finally going to see Judas Priest. Like, I put it off forever. Like, I had tickets, I remember, 1 year to go see Priest with Deep Purple. And I just didn't go because I just didn't feel like it. And now it's like, I can't do it. I have to go. Halford just turned 70 the other day. There's not a lot of time left.
Yeah, you know? No, there isn't. Yeah. I saw him on the painkiller tour. That was nuts.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
Yeah, but that was probably the moment I got into them. Anything before that, I was never really, whatever. But then he worked back with Priest. There is, you know, without being insulting to Priest, not every album, in my eyes, not every album is a banger.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's hard to tell people that, you know, Turbo is a great record, or, you know, like, there's...
Yeah, I like Turbo.
It's catchy. Yeah. I like it all, don't get me wrong, but if somebody... I'll take the argument.
Yeah, but then you've got, you know, the newer stuff, not Nostradamus want it, where they tried to do this massive story, concept, blah, 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 and it just failed. It just fell on its ass. Just do good metal tracks and don't try to be clever.
Well, that's what I think they're back to. But I'm stoked to see them. But, you know, I got it. Like I said, I got it. So, all right, the metal, like we're talking, that shit's... not easy to come across, but it's easier to come across. When did you get a little deeper into the more grimy, into the more hardcore, the more extreme metal world?
I've been playing 30 years, so I've had a lot of influences off other people, you know, drummers, guitarists, blah, blah, blah. So the Slayer route set me off down on Thrash Avenue. Thrash Avenue set me off down... I think probably one of the first bands proper hardcore bands was probably Sick of It All.
Nice.
And I don't know if, I presume, I would think Biohazard are a hardcore, still, you know, certainly were a hardcore band to start with. So they were quite prolific tourers of the UK at one point, and we were going to go see them quite a lot, so... That was sort of the introduction to it.
That's great. Two of my favorites too, for good reason, of course. But so you said you've been playing for several years. When did you start getting involved in making music?
I think my first gig was 1996. So someone bet me and a bunch of pals in the pub. Yeah, you can, you know, it turns out everyone could play an instrument apart from me. I'll shout. I'm good at shouting. Right. And I think 3 months later, we were playing our first gig in a little pub venue, whatever. And the rest is history, I suppose. I've never stopped playing. I think the longest I ever had out, other than the corona shit, was a year. Where the musical tastes were changing of everybody. So it was like the Caius influence had come into a lot of bands, and I was not... I'm into it, but I can't sing like that.
Right.
I am, you know, ultimately screaming, shouting, and that don't work with that.
No, it doesn't work with the band
changed direction. And I couldn't. And I don't think we didn't have the foresight to see stuff like Iron Monkey coming along, where, you know, you could do doom and screaming. I mean, we played with Iron Monkey back originally in, God knows, 1998, something like that. And so that was another turn, you know, another moment of like, oh, hang on a minute, you can do that shit. So, you know.
Well, when does Mastiff start?
Mastiff only started about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
We were in a band before that. Well, me and our drummer have been in bands similar age, you know, 30 years. We've been playing in different bands and never sort of got together until about 8 years ago. And then we did a thing called Downfall. Blood Red Dawn, which was the lead in. That was a real hardcore, true hardcore band. Mm-hmm. And then our guitarist at the time fell out of love with playing guitar. And our bassist then turned to guitar. And that was where pretty much Mastiff were born. I think we did one gig under another moniker, which was Downfall. But when you suddenly look on, you know, all the social media sites at Downfall, there's about 60 bands called that. So
yeah, and I can think of one going around, one touring right now under that name too.
We didn't, you know, you think maybe that, but then you know, but then again, there's probably, I think there's certainly three Mastiffs, but you know, we get on with one of them who are from they're certainly US, but I can't think what state they're from. But we get on with them, yeah. And the other two, I think now maybe have defunct anyway. So,
well, you know, I was talking about this just the other day. I think I hate the way, like, especially hardcore bands, the names are typically real simple, right?
Yeah,
and that's fucking fine. Whatever, it makes it real easy. But then, like, we shouldn't be able to claim them. Like, it shouldn't be, like, you should have to be good for that name to be taken. Like, you should have to be established and, like,
because
just because there's some other Mastiffs out there, if they're not doing really anything with it, then you should be able to take it from them. You know? That's just the way I feel.
Yeah, I mean, no disrespect to the other Mastiff, because they are, you know, they've probably got, without looking it up, but they've probably got more followers on Facebook and stuff. But, you know, it is, I'm not bragging, we're signed, and that's the end of that argument. I don't know how that works particularly, but, a name's a name.
Right, yeah. Well, you guys have released a decent amount of material over the last few years. What do you think has changed about the band since you started till Leave Me the Ashes of the Earth?
There's been a few lineup changes.
Yeah.
Which ultimately is, you know, it has changed the influence of all the sound. Our bass player, old bass player, was a massive, traditional metal. He was into Priest, Sabbath, blah, 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 which is, you know, has a massive influence on a bass sound. Whereas our new bassist, Dan, is a complete noise freak, which works great for what we're recording now. And they're both guitarists. So they're both from a hardcore, blackened hardcore sort of style. So that's the ultimate in, you know, the influence. You can only go on what people listen to and what influences you, so.
Yeah, yeah. What bands do you think that when you started Mastiff, did you know which direction you wanted to take it? Was there a certain, like you said, the blackened hardcore thing, were there certain bands that you heard that you thought, all right, I want to explore this style?
When we originally started, it was influenced by a lot of sludge. So it was, you know, I Hate God, Iron Monkey, they're like the two top ones, probably right. Most influential style. And then again, like I say, so you know, certain members left, and it was, you know, we had a massive influence by the UK band Conan. So it was, you know, they were a massive influence on us. And then you think, well, hang on a minute, Conan are doing Conan. what's the point in us doing Conan? And then the guitar, at that time, our guitarist left. And, you know, we started to fall back in love with each other. Our old guitarist returned and we got another guitarist. And that's pretty much where the blackened hardcore sort of style came in, because that's what they listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
So probably from about 3.5-4 years ago, we started with that, with this sort of style, I guess. And you know, we without trying to big us up, that I think that is our sound now. Mm-hmm. You can tell, without blowing our own trumpets or anything like that, because I don't want to do that, because I hate being like that. But it's not very easy to find a style or sound for a band nowadays that is unique. You know, from our point of view, we think we've sort of got a style or sound, you know, to us now. So
yeah, no, I'd agree, and I'd say listening to all your releases, the progression has seemed pretty natural and gradual in a good way.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like there was a big jump. We're gonna do this now, you know.
No, that's what I say. It was people coming and going, and you know, there was never. I don't think you can. If you're chasing a style, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
I think you've just got to find your own level. Yeah. So.
Well, it sounds like you found it on this record for sure. I mean, the difference between your last full length, sorry, I'm forgetting the name, but the difference between that one and Leave Me the Ashes of the Earth is obvious. It's better, you know, and that doesn't mean what you did before was bad. This is just better.
No,
so when this is, was this your third full length? This is the third LP.
You know, our EP, which is there, one, you know, it's not much less really, but mm-hmm. you know, you're done by time constraints, aren't you? Really, you judge by that nowadays. It's not really how many tracks are on it or anything like that. I think, you know, people like Apple and Spotify choose what it is.
Of course they do. So, they decide everything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long? All right. So I feel like this is a weird thing that I wasn't asking until this COVID crap. But how long ago? Or when did you write this record? How is this record a product of a pandemic? Because, you know, it used to just be, oh, this record was done in the last year and a half, whatever. But now it's like a lot of people, like I'm sure maybe you're going to say, finished it a long time ago and then had to sit on it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Is that what happened here?
When Plague was done, we were lucky because when Plague, you know, we'd finished that tour cycle or whatever. And we'd been writing for probably, what was it, 2019? So we'd probably been writing 6 months. And our guitarists are both quite prolific writers. So even though, you know, we've got Leave the Ashes isn't coming out yet, obviously, but they're wanting to write stuff now because that's what they do.
Yeah.
So we're probably, 6 months after Plague, so about, I don't know. Just trying to work out. We'd had it pretty much 80% written before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And then that came along and knackered us up because, you know, a lot of bands nowadays seem to write on, so, you know, computers, iPhones, whatever.
Yeah.
But we're not like that. Because we're a small city, local boys, we like to get in a room and write that way. It's traditional, you know, songwriting. And where the hell was I going with this? Yeah, so it stopped us from writing or completing the album. So we had the pandemic to, you know, sit through. We had a year, probably, no, maybe 9 months off without actually physically seeing each other for 9 months. So then our lovely government decided we could get back in a room together.
It was very nice of them.
Yeah, that was very good of them. And then we went like the clappers to try and get it sort of finished. We'd booked studio time in September, I think. And we had to push it back twice. Yeah. So we'd pretty much last October we recorded it.
Okay. So, and that's, hey, yeah. You know what? That's not that bad to record it last October and have it out September.
Yeah, we were lucky timescale-wise. But, like, we literally finished it the day before our second lockdown kicked in.
Yeah.
So we were like, yeah, we were, come on, quick. You know, we couldn't afford any more time in the studio. And that, but then, again, you know, to answer another question, we were in the studio for 5 days, whereas that's probably why this, you know, this album sounds far more polished. But we don't like to work. We don't like to give ourselves an open-ended because we like the urgency on the recordings. We like that sort of, it needs, you know, a lot of bands record over months and I think you can get a bit relaxed with that.
Yeah.
You need, you know, we like to work quick. I mean, Plague was done in 2 days. And that's recording and mixing. Whereas this one was 5 days, and then it was sent away to James Plotkin, who mixed, mastered it, sorry. So it's a different basis entirely. And this was done prior to any signings. We weren't, you know, signed by E1 at that point, and we were putting it out on our little old label, the APF. We were a small Manchester band, Manchester label, and so it was... It was all done, but we realised that our songwriting had got better and it needed the respect, I think, of, you know, to be given a bit more time and, a bit more polishing.
Well, that's cool. And I really like how you said that you don't like to leave it open-ended, because there's a part of your sound that I like that I don't think you'd have if you were approaching it more relaxed. Maybe it would be there, but maybe not, as it wouldn't feel the same. And that's the kind of anxiety about it, you know, there's tension in the music, where if you're just fucking doing it as you please, I don't think you have that. Yeah. I mean, if you would have it, but not to a degree, you know. And but it's especially, I like it.
The style of music definitely warrants that urgency or that, you know, claustrophobic feeling as well.
Yeah,
it it works for us. So we enjoy doing it that way, and we're like, you know, we haven't got the money to be blowing that, you know, giving it
right
weeks and months.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's interesting that you also said you weren't on E1 yet, because I assumed you were. When did you make that contact? Because, and well, before I get into that, or I want you to answer that, but also E1 is like, I don't know, maybe like the biggest label that's actually releasing like underground music. And I've talked to quite a few bands from E1 over the years, not a ton, but you know, Toxic Holocaust or Great American Ghost or Lord Dying, whoever else. I've had a bunch of them on here. And it's always interesting to just, that label's huge, you know, it's a big company, but it's releasing like really like underground music. How, and that has to bring a whole different feeling and obligation to you. I don't think you were doing this last time around, were you?
Well, certainly not American reviews. I think we maybe did one. So yeah, you know, our old label boss, Fieldy, would tell you exactly the same. He signs bands to put them where they deserve. Whether that is in the bin or whether that's on a bigger label. So right. We were lucky enough that, you know, we'd recorded the album. We knew someone who worked for E1. He said, just send it over. And when we sent it, we had no clue that they would want to even, you know, entertain us. Basically, we thought we'd send it away, we might get a couple of cool gigs out of it, maybe a support of Crowbar or something like that. And then 2 weeks later, we get this email come back saying, we'd like to talk to you about signing you. And we were like, you're taking the piss. we couldn't ever, we thought, you honestly thought it was a joke. We had to check, with the kid who, our contacts, and he was like, no, they're being serious. So we were like, holy shit. And that was, So it was all after the fact, really.
Wow, that's very cool. That's really cool. And it's I've talked to a couple people from bands. I remember one band was from the UK as well. It was Sermon, this prog rock, like prog metal band. And he was signed to Prosthetic.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a similar thing where he just fucking sent it based on nothing. And they said, yeah. And I think it's a good thing for people listening to consider is fuck the contact. Just send it.
Yeah. Like, you only say it off once, so. Right. Yeah. Sorry, am I allowed to swear, by the way?
Absolutely.
So that, there's no point in, bullshitting anyone. If you don't send it, they can't tell you to go away. Right.
You don't need to be annoying. That's the be annoying and fuck yourself in the future. But
yeah, if they tell you to fuck off, that's pretty much it, isn't it? It's no, thank you. Okay, great. Well, we'll go somewhere else. So we had not that field is secondary, but we had a backup plan that our old label was going to release it, and it was just a cheeky punt in the dark, if you like. So
that's great that it worked out. How much did that change anything for the band?
It's enabled us to do stuff like you said, like interviews with yourself. It's just put us on a bigger playing field. Mm-hmm. It's the, without saying the M word, but the money involved in promotion has just, it's crazy. We didn't do it. We're not here for the money. Because if you're doing it for money, you're doing the wrong thing. Don't be a musician. Don't play in a band. If you think you're going to earn money, there's probably 1% of metal bands that make anything. It hasn't changed us particularly at all. It's just enabled us to get to a bigger audience.
Yeah, and that's great. What about parts like? Because I want to ask about the significance of the album artwork. So what about things like that? Like, all I see is the front cover. Is it, and I assume based on everything you've done before that it was just kind of, here's what we want is the cover art, and that's what it is. Was that still the same thing here?
Yeah, because it was all done. It was all done and dusted.
Oh, packaging and everything.
Yeah, when E1 comes to us, they were like, right, so we'll give you, we'll enable you to get to artists, and we're like, no, it's done. Oh, right, okay. That's done as well. It was, everything was done. It was ready to go. So they were like, okay, right, fine. it was probably one of the easiest signings I've ever had, I would think.
Yeah, and that might explain why you were able to get it out within a year of recording it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a few to and fro's. The original recordings had some samples on it, and we had to go back and take them out because it was going to cost an absolute fortune to do them. it was ridiculous. Like, when you hear the numbers that they were wanting to do these samples, it was just like, no, it's not, just not worth it.
I'm not going to ask you what the numbers are. Can you tell me what the samples were?
It was one off Gummo, which is a little independent film, I presume,
Yeah.
And then there was one off, Twin Peaks, The Return. So if anyone's seen Twin Peaks, The Return, there's a guy on it who's like this weird dark figure. I don't know. And he ends up crushing this guy's head in a radio studio. But he's quoting this thing about a horse, and it was, you know, this is the... anyway, yeah, I can't remember because we'll probably get done for copyright infringement. So, yeah, we had to take that off as well, which we were absolutely gutted about. But I ended up having to go in my, like, laundry room and scream some different lyrics into my phone and send it to the guy who originally recorded us at No Studios in Manchester, Joe Clayton. And he had to, like, mess about with it. And then Plotkin had to remaster it. So it took a, you know, maybe another month to get, you know, the final mixes back and everything that was happy with and everything that E1 were happy with. But yeah, that was the only messing about that we had to do, I suppose. So.
Well, that's interesting because I don't think you would have, I mean, you wouldn't have had to do that if you were just releasing it on the small scale, and it likely would never have been caught. But if it had, you might have been fucked.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And E1 were honest with us. They just said, look, you can try, but we probably would advise you not to.
Right.
And it you know, they were mixed into the noise tracks and bits in between. They weren't like a prime sample. You couldn't hear them very clear, but they were in there, and we were going to have to put the credit on the album, I think. So it would have been then. Yeah, down the line, you think, oh, shit. Nah.
Yeah, you don't want that. So,
nah.
But listening to the album, which I've done a ton of times, the Hiss, the opening track, is really long. And I remember when I was first listening to it, I was like, what the fuck? When is this thing start? And then it goes, right? And then it goes. And then, so I'm going to skip way ahead to the end. And then at the end, you have Lung Rust, which is also really long and different from the rest of the record. The middle is like just this, everything in between is just like fast, right? We're just
pretty much
kicking ass the whole way through. How important was the sequencing for all that? Cause I mean, I can't imagine the record any other way, you know?
So, well, yeah, because, you know, that's how, you know, I presume every band sits down and goes through the tracks and goes, right, we'll have that. And, you know, points them out. Plague was a similar sort of ending to that. There was some slow tracks on Plague, and it finished with, I think, Black Death is 8-9 minutes long, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but then we always like to just finish it. We like that idea of just finishing it with a doomier track, if you like.
Yeah.
It's just the way it worked out. But the Hiss was done. James, our guitarist, he's had that in his head. He's wanted to do it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And because we were in the studio for 5 days, it enabled us to capture it and do it what justice he wanted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was... It was written as also a live intro, I suppose. We would play that, you know, when we get chance, if we get chance, you know, a big enough stage to play it and come onto it, I suppose.
Well, when I say it's long, I don't mean that as a criticism. I just meant it's a good...
Yeah, it is, but...
It's like a tension builder, you know.
Yeah, it is, exactly, that's it. And that's why it's mixed different as well. So it's we did it intentionally, so it's mixed down. People then go, what the fuck's this? We'll turn the amp up, and then, oh shit.
Yeah.
They're dive across the room to turn it back down if they, you know, it's a, you know, we've done it to trick people as well, I suppose. So, yeah.
Well, for this album, and I'm sure you're totally aware of this, has a very miserable feel, right? And the lyrics that I can get out of it seem pretty miserable too. Do you handle all the lyrics?
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, to be fair, this one was there's a bit more input from the rest of the band. This one has got its dark moments on it. To be fair though, it's not as dark as Plague. Plague, I'd gone through a lot of mental stress and a lot of situations and stuff, and plague was is a really dark album. That's why I don't divulge much about my lyrics, really. Mm-hmm. And that was because they're so bloody personal that, you know, people, yeah, if the people get something out of them, then they get something out of them. But, you know, most of them are really heartfelt lyrics on the last one. This one is a little bit more easier, I suppose. There's a couple of, yeah, we're not a politically charged band, but this one has a couple of little digs at, you know, your orange friend and our stupid straw haired friend.
It's hard to write something that doesn't these days, you know, or it did back then.
Yeah, but you know, it was. You cannot ignore stupid people in charge.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever your political views are, whether you agree with it or not, then you've got to be really crafty with what you say nowadays, aren't you? And you know, there is elements of people, you know, believing that orange people are better than, you know. Do you know what I mean? There are ideologies and stuff, but being from like an open-minded background, I can't agree with everything that he says. But then, you know, you've got to let other people have their ideas as well. So.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you and I feel pretty similarly about all that. And it's hopefully we don't need to write much more shit like that coming up. But who knows? We might be stuck for a round two in the near future. So for you with the Leave the Ashes of the Earth, Leave Me the Ashes of the Earth. What's the most exciting part about releasing this record for you?
The most exciting part it's just getting it out and seeing the response. Yeah. Just seeing, you know, on a far bigger scale, just seeing what we get back off it, what interest people see, what, you know, other people take from it. Because it is a little bit more, I don't want to say easy listening, because it's not easy listening, but, you know, it's just a more accessible album, I think.
Do you find yourself having to temper expectations at all? Because this is going to get a much bigger blast than anything you've done before.
Well, it's not, no, because we've got no expectations. Okay. Being from a self-deprecating, you know, I suppose the English are very good at being very reserved.
Right.
So when it comes out and it does what it does, that's what it's doing. It'll do what it does. And if we get praise, great. If people hate it, then tough shit. We still enjoy doing it.
That's right. I think that's a good attitude to have. Well, with the record coming out, and I don't know what the situation is over there. I don't even know what the fucking situation is over here right now. Are you guys playing shows? Or are you looking forward? Are you booking tours? Are you doing any of that yet?
We've played 3 shows. So the first one was about 3 months ago. It was a socially distanced gig.
Yeah.
Biggest room we've ever played. It was like a 2,500 cap venue. But there was only, I think it was 130 people in there, which was weird. Luckily, the lights were bright enough not to, you know. But for 15, you know, it was 15 months since playing the last gig.
Right.
And it was a blowout. I come off there and I couldn't speak for 2 days. So it was just, yeah. But then we played another gig about a month ago. And people are still wary, or were still wary about going out. It was right on the end of the lockdowns. Mm. People were still a bit like, should I, shouldn't I? We've got this pinging system where you had to isolate if you got, you know, been near anyone with like a corona. But then we played last Saturday and people went fucking nuts. They just were like, you know, everybody was on top of everybody. It was hugging. It was how gigs should have been, you know, or are gladly back to being, sorry, should I say.
Is there, with the release of this, is there any, or maybe, I don't know, whatever position you guys are in personally, but is there plans to tour at all for you guys, or is this just one step at a time?
We've got a tour in October, and which is a UK tour, with our pals in Calligram. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're on, so they're absolute, the best boys, black and death, sort of, I don't know, whatever. Noise, it's pretty similar to us. And then we have other stuff in the pipeline for early on next year. We've got a few little gigs and stuff, but we've got to see how this album pans out for everybody. And you know, E1 have said when they signed us, they'd love us to come to the States, which would be a dream come true.
Right.
If I got to step onto a plane because of something I've shouted, I'm more than over the moon with that. So we shall see what happens with that. We've got to wait, for borders and stuff to open up a bit more and a bit more normality to come back. Because there's no point in wasting our money on getting there and finding out, can I do two shows?
You get here and then you got to isolate for 2 weeks and then you got to... No, but that's great about what you said about just even the idea that you can step foot, the idea that you could step foot on a plane to go is great. I did a...
Or a boat or anything. Do you know what I mean? It's just,
That's awesome. And it's a... Like, you and I both know playing, being fans of this type of music, expectations, like you said, are low. They're minimal. It's... You know the heights.
Done this and failed and how many bands, it's just... You do it for the enjoyment and, having a bit of a laugh with your pals and that should be all you ever do. And if it does what it's doing with us and it's taking off a little bit more, then great. It's cool.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, I hope you guys get to do that. I hope you get to come over here and play. It's funny how everybody from here wants to go over there and everybody from there wants to come over here.
Yeah, because if released the Damnation Festival, which is, I think there's like Ministry, Converge, Pig Destroyer, Elder, Pallbearer. It's all the American bands that I think have been wanting to play for the last 2 years.
That's awesome. But let's do some last minute details here that we've already said before, but I want to make sure we have them right. Leave Me the Ashes of the Earth comes out on E1 Music on September 10th, right? So that's just next Friday.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
That's it. So is are records expected to be available then?
Yeah, I believe so. We've seen a picture of somebody who has one.
So
we haven't even got one yet. I think our bass player's got tapes, so which is cool. They're nice. They're really good. I think we were one of the first bands that E1 risked doing tapes on, because we've done tapes, previous, so we have sold a few. They haven't done, they've done, I think they've done a limited run of like 50, but yeah. So yeah, the vinyl should be ready to go. Pre-orders have been up for 2-3 months now, I think, so fingers crossed.
Awesome. Well, hey Jim, I'm glad you're getting to do this. I'm glad you're getting to do it on this scale. The record is awesome. Like I said, I've been listening to it a ton. I hope everybody else likes it as much as I do. Thank you for taking the time to have this conversation. It's late as shit over here. We'll be right back.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Jim of Mastiff. The song you just heard was off of Leave Me the Ashes of the Earth. It's called Repulse. There's a video for that one as well. Go on the internet and figure it out yourself. But the whole album will be available this Friday on E1 Music. I highly suggest checking it out if you haven't already. And go buy it. It is available almost anywhere. And you can stream it literally everywhere. You can stream it from under your bed, I bet. Go give it a try. I want to encourage you to check out gettingitout.net in the very near future. The very, 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 very near future, there will be something there for you. Until then, they'll just be the same page that's been there for 2 years. But in the very near future, there will be something there for you. Anyway, I should thank Jim again for taking the time to have that conversation. I thank you for taking the time to listen. And I especially thank the Patreon subscribers for taking the time to donate some money to keep the Getting It Out podcast system rolling. I also want to thank the people who have so far donated to the Skid Row Garage GoFundMe. That thing is up to almost 34,000 or maybe a little more. And I appreciate that because that is near and dear to my heart. So please keep doing that. Much appreciated. And I think that mostly is going to be it for this week. Before we end this one, I want to encourage you to go to Instagram and follow at @getting_it_out_podcast for everything that I'm up to. And I'm going to leave you with one song from Lotus Thrones. The song is called Diametric Retrograde off of the Lovers in Wartime record. It's a solo project by Heath Rave. You might know him as the drummer of Wolfhammer. It's got a whole bunch of influences. You can pick out which ones you hear and which ones you appreciate. But I want to leave you with this. I don't want to set it up too much. I just want you to hear it and appreciate it and make what you will of it. Thank you for listening to this episode of Getting It Out Podcast. Bye-bye.